Welcome to Steppin' Out, the 12-step meeting on the air. Tonight you'll meet real people with true stories of addiction and recovery. And now, Steppin' Out.
Hello and welcome to America's 12-step radio show. My name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out. The stories you're about to hear are real. It's a 12-step meeting on the air, so kick back, listen in, because if you ever wondered what went on inside of a 12-step meeting but were afraid to ask, you're going to find out right now. We have guests from Al-Anon who are going to talk about what it's like to live with an active alcoholic and how to get help. And first up, we have Kelly. Kelly, how are you doing tonight?
I'm okay. I'm happy to say, though, I do not live with an active alcoholic other than myself. No, just
kidding. Okay.
I'm not active.
Okay.
No.
Well, you know what? In all fairness, why not define what Al-Anon is and is not?
Well,
you know,
it's my understanding of Al-Anon is it's a program about learning how to keep the focus on yourself by not engaging with other addicts.
Okay.
In a way that is unhealthy.
I gotcha.
Takes away from your own life.
Okay, cool. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the alcoholic or addict in your life, and how far back does that go?
Well, I was born and raised in a family of addicts.
You are.
I have three older brothers.
Okay.
Who are all drug addicts,
mm-hmm.
and both my parents are active alcoholics. Mm. Two of my brothers are in recovery.
Okay.
My parents are drinking to this day, and it's a very the stories I hear in Al-Anon are so tragic and dramatic. Sometimes my story seems very innocuous because my parents were part of that whole sort of Dean Martin cocktail era, you know,
sure.
having people over for cocktails at very high functioning.
Yeah. Socially acceptable kind of stuff. Yeah.
And you know, so it took me, I'm shocked. It took me so many years to see my own addiction. And then to actually wake up and see that the entire family system was based on falseness and not really being present.
Talk about that falseness.
Well, it's sort of a silent agreement that I think is pretty pervasive in all of society that says that we don't really have to be present for our feelings.
Okay.
And that we'll do whatever we have to do to keep that subverted, whether it's drinking or shopping or eating or watching too much television or, you know, being too involved in other people's problems, which is what I consider the addiction. I mean, I consider Al-Anon an addiction to people.
Right. I gotcha.
You know, to other people's situations.
We had a guy from Al-Anon in here about 6 months ago, and he had a very unique statement. He said, there's a feeling in the living room. Kill it. And mm-hmm. I thought about that statement, and I think that rings true for your fellowship because mm-hmm. I hear that from every message that comes in here is that there's this kind of numbness to emotion in the family, and that seems to be the breakdown.
Right. A couple of years ago when I started, I've only been in Al-Anon about 3 years.
Okay.
But my early, when I really started to wake up, when I'm still waking up every day, I mean, my consciousness is raising every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, it's a step program, like we're stepping up.
Sure.
And we're stepping out. Mm. Yeah. But,
thanks for the plug.
it's a commitment to consciousness.
Right.
And it's a commitment to spiritual development and growth.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that without paying the cost of feeling your feelings and the reward of feeling your feelings, you know?
Absolutely. Well, continue to paint this picture for this family that you grew up with. I mean, you have this kind of socially acceptable cocktail family. Everything's kind of cool. And then you have these – let's talk about the drug addicts. Tell me about your – was it your brothers?
Yeah, my three older brothers.
Okay, what was that like? And what kind of drugs are we talking about?
Acid, marijuana.
Yeah, so that must have been pretty unpredictable. As a kid,
you know, I still like to romanticize it, and as as I get closer, sometimes when I feel too much, I sort of like step away and go, well, what the hell's the matter? Oh, excuse me.
That's okay.
What's the matter with having that kooky family? Like I had my little green and white polka dot dress. I'm in the back of my brother's, purple Volkswagen.
Uh-huh.
He's tripping. But he's my babysitter.
Right, right.
You know, it's like, what's wrong with this picture? Like, I don't know. What's wrong with the picture?
Everything.
A lot of things, you know. Okay. You know, I can keep it light and I can romanticize
right.
it. But the truth is, a lot went wrong, you know. And as an anonymous fellowship, I'll say on the air, there are things that went on in my family that went on in the lives of many alcoholic families that were just really based on neglect.
Like what?
Neglect, incest.
Okay.
Just not being you know, present for your child. And I think sometimes, and that's the mistake of comparing your life to another person's, because I think sometimes neglect is actually, you know, as injurious and actually extremely complicated, because when you're just neglected, you don't even have a person to react with.
I gotcha.
You have absolutely no mirroring, no sense of self, no, you know, I don't know if I'm making
sense. No, you make perfect sense. Did you grow up feeling detached from your reality? I mean, was it like, did you live in kind of a fantasy, you were saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. I continue to live in a fantasy.
Okay.
I've made it my stock in trade.
Okay. Okay. That's honest. That's honest.
Well, you know, I'm an artist. I'm an actress and I'm an opera singer. And
there you go.
You know, I make a living now.
Literally. Yeah. That's
acting
cool.
Out.
Cool. That is cool. So, I mean, tell us a little bit. I mean, you've painted the picture rather well of this kind of dysfunctional childhood. How did you feel growing up in that kind of uncertainty? Was it just, did you, you said you alluded to the fact that you went to fantasy and you to get out of yourself, but what else did you abuse drugs and alcohol yourself?
Yes.
You did?
Yes, I did.
You did. Now, are you in recovery from that, or did you just, were you able to just put it down? And
I went into recovery about 16 years ago.
Okay.
And then I became a Buddhist 16 years ago.
Did you? Interesting.
And I felt like I had a spiritual solution.
Okay.
And I left the recovery rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I did get sober from alcohol and marijuana, which were my basic drugs of choice, and cigarettes.
Wow.
With chanting and with the support of my Buddhist practice. However, the Al-Anon issues, money issues, and food issues, which are substances that I have to continue to interact with,
okay,
people, food, and money, I came back into recovery through the program of Debtors Anonymous.
Interesting.
Because I really couldn't take care of myself. Because
okay.
I grew up in complete chaos, and I also have an internal need. You know, the one connection I still have with my family is, you know, they'll bail me out.
Right.
And, you know, it's a very, very hard script to break when that's really the only way they've shown up for me,
mm-hmm,
is with a checkbook.
Interesting. And I guess, you know, you were able to apply the spiritual principle of Buddhism to your addictions, but how come it fell short for you in the area of your, for lack of a better term, codependency? Or
because, like I was trying to explain, you have to continue to interact with people.
Yeah.
And you have to continue to interact with food, and you have to continue to interact with
right.
money. It's like these are programs about what you do instead of not what you don't do.
I understand.
Like, I have to learn how to act with people. And it's amazing every day to me that, like, I literally sometimes feel like I'm acting a script.
Understood.
But it's beautiful because I'm learning, you know, because in my family everything's black and white and borderline. It's like there's conflict. It's over.
Right.
Like, I may not talk to somebody, you know. I haven't seen my family in over a year.
Wow.
That's actually part of my mm-hmm. Al-Anon recovery, though, because I had to take a year to, like, get the perspective. You know, it's like being, you're, like, on Earth, you're looking at a fence, it's 6 feet tall, it's giant, but then the further you get away from it, you're all of a sudden looking down, it's just a line.
Sure.
So I've gotten perspective, and I'm actually going to be seeing my family in about a week and a half.
Are you ready?
I don't know.
You don't know.
We'll see. I'm glad that actually they live on the west coast of Florida.
Uh-huh.
And,
well,
they had to evacuate.
Okay.
So I was thinking, like, I had, you know, my magical thinking.
Yeah.
I was, you know, that scene in Forrest Gump where they go and tear her house down, the house where all the abuse took place.
Right,
and I
right.
thought, you know, I take it back, universe.
Oh.
I don't really want their house to blow down. And actually, that's, you know, that's my recovery.
Sure.
So I'm willing to go back there with enough of a sense of myself and my own life and my own ability to take care of myself and enough love for myself and enough compassion for them
mm-hmm.
that even though they're active, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. It'll be interesting, you know.
In case you just joined us, we have friends here from Al-Anon, and we were speaking with Kelly, and Kelly was telling us about what it was like growing up in this household full of alcoholics and addicts, and how the recurring theme there was neglect. And you had touched on a couple of topics before that you had alluded to some incest, if I heard you correctly, and some other stuff. Would you care to share with the audience a little bit about what that neglect was specifically like?
I just was.
Okay.
It was like nothing.
It was like silence. I'm like, the dead air is killing me. I'm like, what
it
is she doing?
It was the dead air.
It was the dead air.
No, I mean, it's the dead air.
Yeah.
I mean, it's dead air. It's like, you know, not having parents, you know, not
yeah.
having parents. And you know, it's extremely ambivalent. I mean, if you have an abusive parent, I'm not trying to say one's better or worse, for crying out loud, but you know, I don't know. I don't want to.
Was it the incest that wasn't spoken of? I mean, did this go on and no one would address it? And was that part of the issue?
Well, a lot of things have come out, you know. Actually, my oldest half-brother was sent away when I was three.
Wow.
Because he was caught. Which, you know, yeah, I mean, that's neglect. Like, what is a 17-year-old brother doing in the bed
right.
with a 3-year-old half-sister?
And where's the parents?
Where are the parents?
Right.
They're at the country club having cocktails and thinking everything's okay.
Right.
You know, it's not the worst case scenario. It's not the best case scenario.
What
can I say? You know, it's left me in a lifetime of acceptance that I can't change the past, and a lifetime of trying to understand and create value out of everything, which is what you were referring to, you know, in terms of my Buddhist practice, is
yeah.
the transformation of my life experience into value and into increased consciousness and understanding and compassion.
Were you able to find peace with your past through the Buddhist principles? I mean, were you able to... You had said before that the key difference why you were able to address your drugs and alcohol mm-hmm. with Buddhism was because mm-hmm. that is a recovery that's based on abstinence. And really,
right.
when you're talking about your family and food, you can't abstain. And
right.
these are people that are going to be in your life.
Right.
Were you able to find or put some of the demons to bed, you know, through that spiritual practice of Buddhism?
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, like chanting and increasing your vibration and increasing your own happiness is one thing, and it's sort of a general overall effect of the practice. But in order to really understand the dynamics of what goes on in an alcoholic family, it's a very specific set of knowledge and understanding that I couldn't find in my Buddhist practice.
Understood.
It's not that people didn't have compassion, but it's like, or I would go and try to understand the depth of my, you know, of my suffering, and that if they don't really understand or not involved in codependency or not involved in debting or not involved in food addiction,
right.
it's just one thing. Well, chant, you know, put your ice cream on the altar and chant, you know, it's like not the same.
There's no empathy
I need
there.
To be in a room yeah. full of people who understand. And of course with people, I don't think there's anyone who couldn't use Al-Anon, and I think it's unfortunate that, you know, there are a lot of people in the rooms who are not from alcoholic families, but the behavior of growing up and just the falseness and the codependency and the boundaries and all of the psychobabble, it's valid.
Yeah.
It's valid, and I don't think anybody couldn't use it. I mean, it's just such a great set of principles. And it's just helped, you know, in so many different ways, particularly in my earning capacity, because, you know, my prosperity is based on how I interact with people.
Sure.
And, you know, having a sense of self, which is something you don't have growing up.
So you never really had any people skills growing up because you were in this void of...
have any modeling. I didn't, you know, I was basically, you know... raw acting out, you know, and then just, of course, the things that I began to do myself as an addict and in, whatever acting out I did, you mm-hmm. know, and then, finally getting the attention from my parents by being chastised and punished,
right?
You know, for doing things that were a direct result of their absolute neglect.
I got you. Now, you had said earlier that you spent a little bit of time before practicing Buddhism that you had come into the rooms of recovery. I guess it was either AA or NA or one of those. Did you hear about Al-Anon at that time?
I didn't. And it's weird
because
I remember even in parochial school, I remember seeing a sign for Alateen and it just didn't even occur to me that I was like what it was to be living with an alcoholic. So my dad drinks vodka on the rocks starting at 11 in the morning, but he goes to work,
right?
You know, and he gets up at 4.
Yeah. So what's the problem?
You know?
Oh, wow.
He's a very affable alcoholic.
Okay.
You know, he plays the harmonica and tells the same stupid jokes. My mother, on the other hand, is a different story.
Okay. All right. But you never heard Al-Anon back then. And what was your path into Al-Anon this time? You needed the fellowship, clearly, to find some sanity.
It came...
How did it come to you?
Through the debting issues and through the...
You had said through Debtors Anonymous?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, I consider my relationship basically with my father, the codependent, you know, it's basically like oh, God, I hope I'm not misunderstood. But if I am, it's okay because I learned in Al-Anon that what you think of me is none of my business.
There you go.
But, you know, the triangulation and incest of, like, sending me money secretly and, you know, right. It's like I'm not your mistress, I'm your daughter.
Right.
And, you know, if you want to give me some money because I'm struggling, you know, but that's really not what it's about. It's like because I'm continually create a pattern of self-destruction despite,
right.
You know, the fact that I have tremendous capacity, tremendous representation. I've done a lot, you know, in my industry. I've had a lot of success. And every time I get close to it, I just completely destroy it because it's like a betrayal, a betrayal, betray.
So that whole, you know, what is the self-fulfilling prophecy of like what you believe, you know, what'll come to pass, like that kind of thing. Like you were just, you know, you're just kind of setting up your own disasters.
So, pretty much.
Yeah. And that's a pattern for you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And Al-Anon helped you break that pattern, huh?
Al-Anon and Debtors Anonymous.
Okay.
I mean, they really go together for me because the more autonomous I become from my family of origin and the more healthy my relationships become, the more I'm able to ask for what I want and to believe that I deserve it.
Interesting. What's it like today? I mean, tell us a little bit about a day in the life of your recovery.
Well, it's been beautiful, you know. Like I can't say any particular products, but I've been doing a lot of commercial work, some television work.
Great.
I'm also an opera singer. I performed well at a very esteemed opera house last year, and they're broadcast by Texaco. Oh, no,
there you go. And you pursued all this in recovery?
All in recovery, and actually, well, no, I mean I've been pursuing it and had my union cards and been an artist for many years, but I've had a very, very rich recovery in terms of having just enough clarity and enough trust, and actually by committing to my solvency and taking care of myself, I manifest a lot.
Okay.
Because it's really, you know, learning to love myself and take care of myself in a really fundamental way.
Sure. What do you want to say to, you know, the teenager out there that's in the alcoholic home that doesn't really know that there's a way out? I mean, what would you say to that person?
There is a way out.
Yeah.
And my heart's with you if you're listening, and I hope you will continue to have a seeking heart and to look for help because it's there, it's everywhere when you start to look for it.
Now, once again, you're listening to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Drew, and this is Steppin' Out.